You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode. Today we are talking with Kim Hubbard of Merchants Mortgage. She is the Executive Vice President and Sales Manager there. And Merchants Mortgage offers a variety of loan products to investors. And so today I'm going to pick Kim's brain about some investing that she's done personally, what Merchants Mortgage can do, and the different types of loan products that they have. So Kim, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Kim, let's just kind of jump in. What's a little bit of background on Merchants Mortgage?
Sure. Well, we've been around in Denver since 1961, so we're super well established and have been through a lot of business cycles and have a ton of experience. I've actually been with the company for 21 years here now in September, so I have a ton of experience, and a lot of our staff has been there for a long time too, so we're very well seasoned. We are expanding. We're in 10 different states now, and we've been hiring new loan officers, but they get the benefit of working with all of us seasoned veterans.
So did Merchants start here in Denver?
We did, yeah, okay. In 1961.
And then expanded out from there?
Exactly. And this is our headquarters and still where we do a bulk of our business. We're very dedicated to Denver, and that's not going to change.
Great. And so I want to just start off with a probably kind of an odd question. Most of our listeners are familiar with traditional lending through portfolio banks and conventional lending. They're also familiar with the concept of hard money lending. But I've heard a Charles Roberts reference Merchant as he says, hey, they're not really hard money, they're more soft money.
Yeah. Charles,
and I've never asked him what that means, but since you're the expert, why does he say that, and kind of where are you guys on the spectrum of lending?
Sure. Yeah, Charles is right. We joke around that we're mushy money because we are a blend in between soft money and hard money. So soft money would be like a bank or a long-term conventional loan, and they're going to be the lowest interest rates and fees, but they will have the most requirements, and they don't often work that well for a fix and flip that needs to close quickly. With an investor that maybe needs really flexible income underwriting. Now, on the other side of us is hard money. And hard money lenders will typically be the most expensive because they are the most lenient. So some hard money lenders won't look at like debt to income or anything but the property itself. And we're more in between those two types of financing. So we're a lot faster and a lot easier than banks. We're not as lenient as a true hard money lender on some of our qualifications, but we're a lot cheaper than hard money. So for that client, and there's a big niche in the middle there that wants that money that's cheaper than hard money.
And so that's really, so compared to hard money, if I'm understanding you correctly, you used to have some stricter underwriting requirements, which gives you the ability to give better rates to your borrowers then?
That's right. That's right. Okay. We typically do require a down payment, and some hard money loans don't, but some do. So we typically require 10% down from the borrower, and we're lending 90% of the purchase price and 90% of the repairs. And so since the borrower has some, as they say, skin in the game, that then allows us to put our money out quite a bit cheaper to that client.
Okay. That makes sense. So let's talk about what you already touched on, but what are the different loan products that you have?
Sure. Yep. So most of what we do is fix and flip, but we do also have clients that fix and hold. And I can talk a little bit more about that later. We do a lot of ground up construction, you know, a lot of those duplexes that you see that were ground up in the Highlands, Lower Highlands, Sloan's Lake. We've done a number of those projects. One of them that we have right now is at 35th and Quivis, and the client has sold one side of the duplex and they've got the other one up for sale now. And we also do small commercial real estate deals too. So we'll have clients that will invest in maybe like an 8-unit apartment complex or a 10-unit and either condo them and sell them individually, mm-hmm. or maybe fix them up and keep them as a rental. So we do multifamily and commercial as well.
Okay. So let's start off with kind of just the fix and flip loan products, and we'll ask some questions there, then kind of just move our way across the spectrum. Your fix and flip is the one to require 10% down, right?
That's right.
Okay. And actually, just so give everyone some context on here, I think it was about a year ago, I did either a webinar or a podcast about my one and only fix and flip around Denver. And I'll put a link in that in the show notes. And the loan I used was actually through Merchants Mortgage. And it was this loan product in particular. So if you guys want, you know, just some reference points, definitely go back and check that out. So just walk me through. I want to come in and buy a fix and flip through you. Walk me through what information you need, what are the terms, and how does it work?
Sure. Yep. So it is a good idea to get pre-approved with us or any other lender that you're working with. So even before you have a contract on a property, go ahead and meet with the lender, get the information that they require so that they can review your loan file and get you pre-approved for how much they can qualify you for upfront. So we're going to ask for the basics. We will have you complete a loan application. It's a simple process. It's pretty abbreviated loan application, and it's on our website. And then we will ask for your last tax return, but we don't underwrite that at all like a conventional lender. It's much, much simpler than conventional underwriting and has a lot more investor-friendly ways of qualifying you than a conventional loan. We will get your current bank statements, so anything like checking, savings, stock accounts, mutual funds. And then we'll want to know a little bit about you. Like, have you invested before? And if you haven't, who is the team that you're working with so that you've got a good game plan? Do you have a good contractor lined up? You know, are you working with a good mentor? Like, somebody like you that's already done a flip, you know, somebody at your castle that's extremely experienced in real estate like yourself. So having that good team built around you is going to help a lot if you have not already invested before.
So your underwriting process is a combination of looking at the person's abilities and team and also their finances and the underlying property, kind of a combination of those three?
That's right. That's exactly right. And then, like I said, our criteria is going to be easier than a conventional loan. We do like to see good credit, but it doesn't have to be off the charts. So most of our clients on that 90% program will have a 680 credit score. If they don't, if they can bring on a good co-borrower that has the good credit, that could work for us as well. Or potentially, if they could put more money down, if they don't have a high enough credit score, that could get us over the hump as well. And then we do have very easy income underwriting. I'm able to use your gross income as a self-employed person versus your net income. So, for example, with conventional financing, they will take your last 2 years' tax returns, look at the adjusted gross income, and just average those two. And most self-employed fix and flip investors don't show great net income on their tax returns because they do have a lot of expenses that they write off. So I'm able to use your gross income prior to all of your expense write-offs to help you qualify. I can also go up to a 65% debt to income ratio because this is short-term financing. So I'm going to have more flexibility in those areas.
Okay. And because we do have a lot of self-employed people who listen to this, you know, as real estate agents, investors, do you require 2 years of tax returns or is just that 1 year?
We can just take the last one. Okay. And, you know, for a client that at this point in time, most of our clients do have their tax returns filed. But if it was earlier in the year and you had it under extension, we could take the previous year's tax return and then maybe just your 1099 statement or a profit and loss statement for current year. So we're going to have some flexibility in that as well.
And what's the most common mistake or hiccup that you see people coming to you with during the underwriting process? So if people want to come to you, get pre-approved, you know, in the near future or longer term, is there one or two common mistakes you see that people can hear and start working on before they come talk with you?
I would say this is true for any lender, that it's better to have all of your financials together versus kind of dribbling them over in little bits and pieces to us.
Okay.
You know, if you send the lender a pay stub one day and then, you know, it takes 2 weeks for you to send in your bank statement, you lose a lot of momentum that way and it becomes confusing for the lender. It's better to have your ducks in a row.
Okay. And if I recall correctly, I'm totally going off my memory here. When I did my fix and flip with you guys a year and a half ago, that I did a 90-10 loan, I think it was 2 points up front and 10% interest rate, right?
That's right. Not a lot has changed on that. It is a little bit more if you're doing more than 50,000 in repairs. We're at 2.25%. But otherwise, yeah, 10 and 2 or 2.25 is our terms.
And actually, let me just back up because I know some people may not be familiar with the lingo. So what is a point? If I'm paying you 2 points, what is that?
Sure. It's just the percentage of the loan amount that you pay to the lender at the time of closing. And it's always on your loan amount. It's not on your purchase price that you're buying the property for. It's on the loan amount with a lender.
And the loan amount is the combination of the 90% you loan on the property and 90% you loan on the construction loan as well, right?
That is right. We do have some clients that choose to fund the repairs themselves if they've got, you know, a cheap line of credit or, you know, accounts with Home Depot or Lowe's that they want to use instead of borrowing our money for the repairs. They can do that as well.
So explain to our listeners, I mean, just how does the improvement escrow or the construction loan work with that? Because I remember when I was doing my fix and flip, that was one of the biggest learning experiences for me with taking the draws and showing receipts and all that. So how does that process work?
Yeah, and I do think that is a big learning curve for investors starting out for our product. And it can vary from lender to lender, but on our product, I think we've got a very investor-friendly process for the draws because we will give you advance money. So let's say, just to use an easy number, that your fix-up account is $30,000, and we are holding that after you close the loan with us. And right after closing, you can submit for your first draw for up to a third. So in that example, it would be $10,000 that you can get right after closing up front as money back in hand. Now, we don't want you paying that directly to the contractor. You know, you need to make sure your contractor is getting the labor done before you're actually paying the contractor for their labor. But that advances for materials for you to be purchasing to get the job started. And then you will want to hang on to your receipts, regardless if you're funding the repairs through us or not. You've really got to stay on top of that budget and see where you're at every day, how much you've spent, how much you still have left in the budget. So do that, not just for us, but for yourself on a project. And once you've done that first advance, we will come out to the property when you request your second draw. We'll make sure that the work for that first advance got done, and we'll collect those receipts to see what you paid at the property. And then you can have your next advance up front again. So we are giving you advance money at each stage, which is nice, versus a lot of construction loans, you have to pay out of your pocket first, get the work done, and then get reimbursed.
Oh, so a lot of times you have to float the money yourself.
Right, exactly. Okay. Yep.
And then when you guys come out and do your, I don't want to call them an inspection, but your property walk, what are you looking for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we are looking to see that things that you've requested to have the next advance on did get completed in the first advance. So in the first advance, if you thought you were going to get the demolition done and some rough electrical and rough plumbing done, when we come out to at the time of your second advance, we're going to expect to see those items that you requested in that prior draw finished so that we can give you your next advance.
Now, how accurate does one have to be with what they submit on paper versus what happens in the real life? I mean, as you know, and I'm sure you've seen on numerous projects that like things usually don't go according to plan. Or they did not go for me. And I've talked to a lot of people. That's the way it works.
Yeah, it's construction. And I've done fix and flips myself and have gone over budget or had to figure out ways to get back in the budget. So we do allow change orders for you if you figure out, hey, I got the hardwoods done and I have money left in the hardwoods, but now I see that I didn't put in enough for the light fixtures. We'll let you move money around within the budget. We do also require that you have a minimum of a 10% contingency in your budget when you start so that you've got some extra wiggle room in there. If you're coming with completely unexpected surprises, that will have to come out of budget because once we close, we've only got a certain amount to lend on the project and we're expecting to see everything in that budget get completed.
Okay. Now, as far as like the loan process and the draw process, did I miss any questions there or kind of I'm trying to just get the most paint the most accurate picture for our listeners out there while they're listening to this.
As far as the loan terms, we talked about the rate and the fee. Another thing to ask a lender is what are your other closing costs? Because lenders can add a lot into that area. So when you're considering your deal, make sure you know what the closing costs are in addition to the points. We charge a $385 processing fee for merchants, which is low for the industry.
What's typical?
It can be up to $1,000, but kind of typical is more like around $500. So we've kept it at $385 for a long time. So it is low for the industry. We do charge for appraisal, title work, and recording fees. So our closing costs, including those that I just mentioned, all total about $1,600 to $1,800. So you want to factor that in when you're looking at your deal.
Okay. And just going back to the construction loan and the draws. So I take out my first draw. Spend it, request it. You guys come out, look at the first time, give me the second draw. And assuming before the third draw, you're going to come out and do another site inspection just to make sure that things are getting done like I said they would on paper a few weeks before.
That's exactly right. Yes. And it's not an all or nothing. What I mean by that is sometimes people will not get everything in that first advance completed. Let's say that in that first advance that they requested the money for the cabinets and they've ordered the cabinets, but they're not in yet, but they're ready to move on to the next stage of the project. Well, I'm not going to be able to give them 100% credit for the cabinets because they're not installed yet. We'll probably give 50% credit since they've been ordered. So sometimes we do have to hold money out of that second draw because something didn't get completed from the first draw. But we're going to give you as much as we can at each advance so that we're helping you get that and keep that project moving as quickly as possible.
And do you have any good tips? Because this is something that was just a learning experience and also just kind of a headache was, you know, I put together a spreadsheet to track expenses. And by the time, you know, it started out nice at the beginning of the project. And by the time I got to the end, it was just a complete mess. Do you have any like just advice or templates or software you can recommend to help people stay organized on their fix-up costs while they're going through the construction process?
As far as that, we do have the budget form. And even if you're not using us, I'm happy to provide that to you or anybody. And it is an Excel spreadsheet, so you can slot in what you've paid for each line item. And then it will show you how much you have left in that category.
Is that on your website?
It's not, but I'm happy to provide it to anybody that wants the internal draw sheet that we use.
And they'll just email you asking for it?
Yeah.
Perfect. And we'll put Kim's email address in the show notes here. So before we jump on to kind of other loan products, I know you've done some fix and flips yourself.
I have.
What have you done? Kind of what's your experience? What's your background? What's the success story? What's the not success story?
Sure. Yeah, so I haven't been doing them recently. Once it did start getting really competitive in the market to get the property, I kind of backed away because I don't want to be competing against my own clients. I'm doing plenty of loans and I don't need to be, you know, stepping on other people's toes when I'm trying to get their loan business as well. But I have done a number of flips. I did a pop top in the Highlands. I did a duplex in Whittier, which turned out great. I love getting those duplexes that you can split and sell individually. You make a lot more money that way. And that one was a great project. It was right by the hospital. The pop top I did, learned from that one that sometimes it's just better to scrape the property because you're spending so much with architectural plans, trying to retrofit everything to an already existing property. And for those of you who may not know what a pop top is, I'm talking about taking off the roof of an existing home and adding on another story. And the other thing I learned, and this is something where I went against my gut because I actually know this, having been in the industry so long, that property in the Highlands, it backed right up to the Highlands Square. And so it was literally, you walked across the alley and Anthony's Pizza is right there. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, this is going to add value because who doesn't want to be so close to the Highlands Square? This is awesome. Everybody wants to be in the Highlands and be near all of the boutiques and restaurants. Well, it's a little bit too close and people don't want to back up directly to commercial. And I knew that from my background, but you know, in my head, I'm thinking, oh, I'll be able to get more for the property. When in reality, I did have to discount the property. The ones across the street did sell for more because they weren't directly on the commercial.
How much did you have to discount it for? Do you remember, like, just a rough percentage?
Yeah, I probably had to knock off about $10,000 back then on that property to get it to move for that reason.
And what year was this?
This would have been like in 2012.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was just as things were starting to heat up then.
Yes.
Okay. So what advice can you give? Because you've been there, you've done that. You work with flippers on a daily basis. A lot of people want to get into flipping. What advice can you give people that want to do that as a business or an investment?
If they're just starting, you really do need to build your team. And that advice has not changed since the dawn of time on Fix and Flips. So you should be networking a lot with the local networking clubs. You should be lining up a lender, and you may want to have a couple of lenders because you may get into different projects that have different needs. So you might want to have a bank and a soft hard money lender like me and a hard money lender. So talk with a lot of different lenders, talk with a lot of different sources, realtors such as yourself that can help find properties, build that team, and also contractors, and really get a good construction contract and make sure that you're using that on every project, regardless if you are using your brother-in-law as the contractor or somebody you've used before. You want to treat it as a business at all times and have things in writing, especially on the construction piece of it. You know, on that construction contract, you want to have exactly what the scope of work is going to be, when they're going to get paid based on work completed, have deadlines in there, have penalties for deadlines that are not met, have bonuses for deadlines that are met, so that, you know, there's a lot more control on your part versus leaving everything up to the contractor.
And how, it's not the right word, but how fancy of a construction contract is someone need? Do I need to go get an attorney to draft it up? Or is it as simple as me spending 20 minutes in the Word document saying, hey, you know, XYZ construction will do this, this, and this, and I'll pay you this upon completion. If it's not met, it's just as simple as that. Or where's the, where do I go on that spectrum?
Sure. Well, and the great thing about technology now is there are a lot of great forms online, you know,
so that just
you
Google
can it? Google it. And more than likely you can find that. More than likely, if you're setting up an LLC, you can find a good operating agreement online. If you are working with partners, you also want to have an operating agreement to outline everything about the partnership so that there's no confusion. You have things to refer back to in writing that everybody has signed off on.
And how do people go about like building their team? Like we hear that phrase all the time in every real estate investing book. I mean, what's like one advice you can give people? Because I'm sure people contact you all the time, you know, wanting to work with you as a lender. And I'm sure you get people across the spectrum from being nice to being not nice, to put politely. Like how can people go about building their team and work with like, you know, just good professionals?
Sure. Well, starting, I mean, obviously listening to podcasts, going to networking groups and start figuring out who the players in this industry are in the market that you're in, and then asking for referrals. You know, once you find a good lender that you're happy with, okay, who do you recommend that I go to as an agent or a wholesaler to find properties? Who do you recommend that I use as an insurance agent? So don't be afraid to ask questions, ask for referrals, and get yourself out there and network. Learn who the players are in this industry.
And actually, I want to loop back at a question to ask you about the construction contracts, because, I mean, you're in a really unique position where you get to see lots of volume and lots of fix and flips. Is there a recommended way you would advise people to like structure how they pay their contractors? Because I've talked to many flippers and it seems like people do it all across the board. And a lot of times people always shifting, trying to, you know, deal with how much they're paying up front versus holding or paying every couple of weeks and drawing their, you know, giving draws to their contractor for materials. Do you have any like advice that you can give people, help them figure out the best way to do that?
Well, ideally, and I know this doesn't work for everybody, depending on, you know, if you have a full another full-time jobs besides your investing, but ideally, if you can buy the materials yourself, and so you'll have to talk to your contractor to figure out what those materials are. You'll have to be on the same page of how much paint they need and how much flooring and whatnot. But if you can go purchase them yourself, then you are not risking having the contractor mark up those materials.
Okay.
And you're not risking giving them money to have it not be used at your project and kind of run off to somebody else's project. So the more that you can be in control of it, the better. Otherwise, you know, if you are going to give money to the contractor for materials, I would have them give you a written itemization of what they're going to be spending that money on, make them accountable for it, and only give them the amount that they need for that portion of the project. Don't be giving them half of the budget. They're not going to need fully all of those materials to start with.
Okay, that's really good advice. Now, let's move on to like doing fix and holds. Because, I mean, looking back, I remember about three quarters of the way through my project, I was like, I wish I could just keep on to it and actually turn to a rental just because as I learned Dynamics, it just numerous reasons I couldn't do that. But for buying a place, fixing up with a long-term goal, then turning into a rental, is that the same loan product as your 10% down or is that a different loan product? And how does that work with like long-term financing?
Sure. Yep. And we have a lot of clients that fix and hold. I am still just the short-term piece of it. So it's really the same fix and flip loan. But then we do have some very good conventional lenders to refer clients to that we worked with over the years that can do the refinances. Now you are going to need to meet the conventional lenders' requirements. You know, remember, my requirements are easier, but if you're going to hold it, you'll want to meet those long-term requirements. So when you're fixing and holding, we recommend that you get pre-approved not only through us, but through the takeout lender to make sure that you're going to meet their requirements for the takeout. And the reason people use our loan and then refinance into the long-term financing is because I require less down payment. So they're going to have less cash tied up in the project if they do our loan and then refinance later. If they bypass us and just go straight to the conventional loan, they'll typically have to put 20 to 25% down instead of 10% down. They also won't get the money for the fix-up that they can get 90% of on my program. So they'll have a lot more of their own cash tied up in that property than if they did the purchase through us and then the refinance. Because at the point they refinance with the conventional lender, at that time, the conventional lender is going to be able to go off of the new appraised value since the property has been fixed up at that point.
And hopefully it's higher.
Right, exactly.
So just to be clear, because I know financing is so critical in everything in real estate. So even if I want to do a fix and hold, before I even buy the property, I should be approved through you or another hard money lender and also approved through a conventional lender too. Like, you want to figure out the conventional long-term financing before you even buy the property, right? That's something you figure out halfway through.
Exactly. Because, you know, if you're intending to hold that property as a rental and you use my program and I've got the really easy income underwriting and then you go to the conventional lender and they're like, there's no way you qualify on our program, you've shot yourself in the foot. So again, it's about having your ducks in a row.
Yeah. Okay. Really good to know. So what is a common mistake you see fix and flippers and fix and holders make as they come and work with you? Do you see like common mistakes that you can give people some, you know, words of wisdom, help them hopefully avoid a couple pitfalls?
Yeah. You know, and it changes over time. It used to be that investors were frequently over improving the properties. We don't see so much of that anymore. I think if investors have gotten wiser to that and buyers have become more demanding too. They do want some of the nicer finishes. So, you know, you do have to put a little extra into them these days that maybe you didn't have 2 years ago.
Can you give some specific examples of like what an over improvement is? Is it like making the kitchen too nice or like what exactly?
Yeah, it's, you know, just kind of making it to your own taste and putting in things that don't really add the value to the property. You know, we've seen clients make the kitchens, and the kitchen does need to be very nice. As we know, that's what sells the home. But, you know, they've put in so many bells and whistles that the client really does not know that that's a $20,000 oven. You know,
yeah.
So they're perfectly happy with, you know, something lesser than that, that looks nice and is appropriate for the neighborhood and the property. But we don't see so much of that anymore. I hate to keep bashing on contractors, but right now in this last year, that has been the common mistake of giving the contractor too much leeway. And there are good contractors out there, but again, you got to treat it like a business. And the mistakes that we've seen in this last year are people just doling out too much money ahead of time to the contractor.
And you're saying too much leeway, like the money's disappearing or the contractor's just picking like subpar finishes or both?
We've seen both. Okay. Yes. So that has been a learning experience over this last year from some clients.
Now, I mean, we've already touched on this. I mean, everyone knows that the Denver market has shifted. It's hot. It's hot and it's probably stayed hotter longer than most people have predicted over the last couple of years. But And I know fix and flips are becoming harder and harder to find. Margins are getting tighter, at least from the people I work with and talk with. That's kind of the common thing I hear people moaning about. But what are the opportunities in the current marketplace do you see out there right now as of September 2018?
Well, we've still had a tremendous amount of volume, even though it is becoming a bit of more of a buyer's market. I don't think it's entirely a buyer's market yet, but they are starting to be pickier, taking their time. They're not as anxious to get into bidding wars. You know, they're looking at what it costs to rent versus what their mortgage will be, and sometimes they're deciding to rent. So I think you have to be smart about it now to do well in it. But I have a lot of clients that are still doing very well. But you have to price it right going out right now. You don't want to get extremely aggressive and be, you know, way at the top of the market. You got to know what the comparable sales are and realize that it may take a month to sell it. You might not get multiple offers on the first day. So I always recommend to people that they do a profit calculator and base it on a bunch of different scenarios, or probably at least three scenarios. So what's your profit going to look like if you sell it in 4 months? What's your profit going to look like if it takes you 6 months? What's it going to look like if it took you 9 months? And what does it look like if you have to drop the price by 5%? What does it look like if you have to drop it by 10%? I can also provide that to anybody that wants it. I've got that for myself that I used in my own investing. So just, you know, be more prepared for different scenarios in the market. And if you're buying it right, you know, I've again been doing this for 21 years and have clients been successful in every single cycle. So it can be done. And the thing about it too, as some fix and flippers get out of the market because it is getting a little tougher on the margins, that starts creating opportunities for those flippers that stay in it.
Yeah. And have you seen, again, I don't do a whole lot with the fix and flip world. That's mostly just talking with people and hearing secondhand information. Have you seen more people shift to like doing the scrapes and pop tops versus just, you know, like I'll say simpler fix and flips?
Yes, that has been a trend. I do have a lot more clients that have done scrapes in the last year or two, even last couple of years, as well as clients, I think I mentioned earlier, start getting into the small multifamilies. There are some opportunities opening up there as well.
Well, let's talk about that. Like, give us an example. Like, what type of opportunities are you talking about there? Mm-hmm. Like, what's going on in the small multifamily world? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just had a client call the other day, and it's actually two fourplexes that she's looking at in Aurora. And those are going to be holds for her, but they do need quite a bit of work for them just to be even in rentable condition. And she is going to hold them as rentals. And we do have a referral for her for the takeout on the commercial financing for that as well. We also have had clients. I have a client on, I think it's 51st Avenue. It's up north, and he built a 16 unit that are condos, and he's been very successful. He's done them in stages. He didn't do the entire thing at one point, so he's done it very methodically, but he's on his last group of buildings on that project.
And he's building and selling those, right?
That's correct. Yeah. So I have kind of both going on. I have clients that are building multifamily and selling them off individually, and others that are keeping them as rentals, depending on the neighborhood and the market.
And what do your, I know one of your other loan products for the ground up construction. Mm-hmm. What are the basic terms mm-hmm. and rates on there?
Sure. It's not that much different than a fix and flip, honestly. The rate's a little bit higher. It's 10.5%. But with those construction loans, because obviously there is more in the repair account or the construction account, we only charge the interest on those construction loans as the funds are being drawn for the construction versus on the whole loan amount up front.
Okay.
And then that is a 9-month loan versus a 6-month loan on the fix and flip. Both of them can go up to a year because we do have automatic extension periods on them. But you do start paying an extension fee after the initial loan term is up. So the construction loan is 9 months, and then you have an additional 3 months, but you would experience extension fee on those last 3 months.
Is that typically just like a point?
It's you only pay for what you actually use, and it is 0.33% per month. And so if you did need the full 3 months, that would be a point. It doesn't change your monthly payment. You keep making that monthly payment, and then any extension fee is added on to the payoff at the end of the loan. So you don't have to come up with it out of pocket each month, but it will be on your payoff.
Okay, that makes sense. And something I've read just in your loan documents is that you guys allow for cross-collateralization to cover down payments.
Yes.
What is that, and how can people use that to help them with funding deals?
Yeah, I've had a lot of clients do it over the year. Cross-collateralization is where if you own another property and it has a lot of equity in it, so maybe you own it free and clear, you have no mortgage against it, that's kind of a no-brainer for us to do that property. Or maybe you've got a low loan balance, like a property that's worth $300,000 and you only owe like $150 on your first mortgage on it. That's going to give us room to do what we call cross-collateralization. So that will cover your down payment for the fix and flip that you're buying. So you don't have to put in any of your own cash. We simply put a lien on that other property. So it ends up being one loan. It's not two separate loans, but we have more than one piece of collateral on it. That's why it's called cross-collateralization.
And can people use their primary residence, or does it have to be an investment property?
It can be their primary. You know, I always advise people that the risk is if you're not making your payments, if something goes wrong, which doesn't happen often, but that is the risk with cross-collateralization, that we could foreclose on both properties. So yeah, as long as they're, you know, aware of that scenario, you know, it could be a primary or an investment property.
And are those terms, if I were to use another property as, you know, collateralization for down payment, are the terms the same, or does that involve more fees or points or structure things differently?
If you are cross-collateralizing in second lien position, so you already have a mortgage against the cross-collateral property, then we will charge an extra 0.25% on the origination fee.
Okay.
If it's free and clear, we'll just charge our normal pricing.
Okay. And I mean, is there a hard and fast rule that, hey, you have to have 30% equity in a property for us to do it, or does it just depend?
We usually will not go over a 70% on the cross collateral as far as the total loan to value, because we don't want to get people way over leveraged. You know, so we don't want to be like at 100% loan to value on the cross collateral property. So you're going to have a pretty low loan to value to start with.
So let me just to clarify for our listeners out there. So you generally won't go above a total combined 70%. So if I have 50% on my existing mortgage, typically, you won't go more than 20% on top there for a total of 70%.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah,
you got it.
Perfect. And you mentioned at the very beginning that you guys do quick closings. What is quick?
Yeah, we're great at that. We're not afraid of them. Do them all the time. So quick is typically within a week or less. And that helps our clients be competitive out there against investors that are offering cash, because it typically takes a cash deal about a week to close because they're still going through the title company. They still have to get their funds together. So if we can close within a week or less, we are helping our clients be competitive against those cash offers. And we've done thousands and thousands of deals in a week or less.
Well, Kim, I am all out of questions off the top of my head here. Are there any just final thoughts or questions that you wish I'd asked you that you want people to remember this podcast from?
I would just hit on some of those highlights that we talked about. If you are new to investing, those are some of my best examples. Some of my favorite clients have, you know, laid all of the groundwork and really built it into a business. You know, one of my clients that I started with that I met just at a real estate networking club, they had never done a deal. They're now on their like 10th deal with us, and they have their own website for their fix and flip business. They started their own staging company to stage their properties. They just did a deal fairly recently with us in Applewood out in Golden. It's a Golden address, but it's really kind of Lakewood. They just netted $70,000 on that. So if you stick with it, if you treat it like a business, if you build up your team, if you learn from your mistakes, you can definitely do well in this business. And like I said, I've seen it over 21 years, and I've seen it in every single cycle of this market. So, you know, just if you're doing it right, you can make money in any market.
Ooh, so I do have one more question. I actually have a couple more questions for you now, Kim. You talking market cycles again. Do you have a crystal ball in front of you as to what's going to go on the next couple of years in the Denver market? What's your predict? I always like to put people on the spot. What's your prediction? What's your best guess?
Sure. Well, I think my crystal ball has been wrong because I keep saying, I keep saying in Denver, like, okay, in the next 2 years, it's probably going to slow down. But I actually think we are at that point. And that's not necessarily a bad thing for this market to get some reality and start flattening out a little bit. You know, I think we all realize from the last cycle that it's not a bad thing to flatten out. So I do think that this current stage that we're seeing is maybe not just seasonal, that maybe it will become a little bit more of a buyer's market. And like I said, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Yeah. And in some ways, it opens up other opportunities.
So is that more just like a kind of like a gut reaction based on all the stuff you're seeing? Or have you seen like specific data points that's kind of making you feel like the market might not be being floored anymore, might be taking the foot off the gas a little bit?
You know, it's a combo of those, like my gut and just, you know, seeing how much has been built in construction in this town. It's got to slow at some point. You know, some of the articles that I read, I know your castle does a great job of, has always done a great job of tracking market trends. So I'm sure you guys can add a lot more than me, but that's my own personal crystal ball.
Great. Well, we'll check back in a few years and
see if it's still broke.
Yeah. And I'm still on your guys' email list and your mailing. Yeah, also your mailing list. I get some postcards from you guys once in a while. And I can't remember specifics, but you guys hold some local events and some classes. What are some of the education that you guys provide? How can people learn more? How can they get plugged into what you're doing here?
Sure. Well, if they want to be added to my mailing list, just give me a shout. My number is 303-770-6801, or my email is khubbard@merchantsmtg.com. We also have a meetup group if they want to go on that. It's Denver Real Estate Networking, and we are at a lot of different events that we don't necessarily host ourselves, but we're a part of, so they can also see us at a lot of different local events.
Great, and I know Kim just threw a lot of names and phone numbers at you. I will put those in the show notes so you guys can just click on it and get in touch with her. Well, Kim, thank you so much. I really appreciate this.
Oh, I've enjoyed it. Thanks so much, Chris, for having me.